ladies and gentlemen, and everything in between. Welcome to another episode of The Family Cast. Food and music is life. Yes? Yes, I would agree. And this episode is all about Chef Joanne Stabile. Ladies and gentlemen, Chef Joanne Stabile. Chef Joanne Customized Catering. She is a badass business lady owning a business with several facets, employing a bunch of other badass ladies in the culinary industry right here in San Diego County. She also has a love of music, which we will get into in our conversation. You'll hear us on location because what happened was I destroyed the first part. I don't know what happened. My laptop was in the sun. We were in her backyard. The whole conversation got somehow befuddled. I don't know. So we moved into the living room for the second part. But then I had to go back, redo the first part. So we have a couple of locations. It's going to sound different in for the first 15 minutes or so because we are at a coffee shop, which is kind of cool. And then our conversation carries on back at her place in the living room where she has all kinds of art and music and puppy dogs. So they are all those things will be coming up in the conversation. You'll hear from Chef Joanne and I, two music friends, two culinary friends, and we're just talking about everything. Before we get into the episode, I wanted to share with you that the tickets are live for the first beer pairing event that I'm doing this year. It's been over a year since I've done one or so at Harvest Kitchen. We're ready. You're ready. We're partnering with Kitchens for Good. It's a local charity that I work with that teaches culinary skills to people, does job training. I have somebody from there in my kitchen now. So we're going to do it. New Belgian Brewing. We're going to be highlighting Voodoo Ranger beers. So this episode of the Family Cast is brought to you by New Belgium Brewing Company, Voodoo Ranger, Fruit Smash, Fat Tire, all that good stuff. Anyways, tickets are live. The link is in the bio at the Harvest Kitchen Instagram and webpage. Check it out. Sunday, May 16th. Get your mom a Mother's Day present of a beer pairing. It's going to be some delicious food. It's going to be a rocking good time. And we're going to be supporting a good cause. So, Sunday, May 16th. Tickets for the beer pairing event. We got one right around the corner right after that too. I don't have all the details yet, but I believe it's June 3rd or June 5th or something like that. So we got all kinds of stuff in the works. Be ready. Lots of fun stuff. I'll be doing the Family Cast on location at the event. So you could be on the podcast as as a crowd guest. So anyways, tickets, 5/16. That's the date. Don't save the date. Just go get a ticket. It's going to sell out. It's going to be amazing. I'm already stoked on the food and the drinks. So let's rock and roll, baby. Actually, that's funny because Chef Joanne on this episode, she will be there in attendance and probably some other chefs that I've had on this episode too. So the music is going to be paired and curated with the food and the drink. It's just going to be so much fun. I can't wait to do it. It's been bubbling for over a year in the archives of things that we want to do. We shot some video footage. We got some rad stuff in the works for the Family Cast, for Harvest Kitchen, for New Belgium, for Kitchens for Good, all kinds of fun stuff. Beer Savage is going to be there with some goodies and prizes and all that kind of stuff. We got our giveaway ready to rock. I want to highlight the beer dinner first, then we're going to get into the giveaway. And then, we're going to talk more after this conversation with Chef Joanne, because I got some more details to share with you. So thank you so far for listening to the Family Cast. We still are not quite yet to our 20th episode, but I got some fun stuff planned for it. And what else is next for you? I would like for you, since I don't ask for much, do I? Do I ask for much of you? If I do, I'm sorry. Here's another thing. I'm going to ask you to share the episodes, share the podcast with somebody. There's enough guests on here now that you're going to relate to some of their conversations. So go look through the episodes, see which one you like, share that with somebody, subscribe to the show wherever you listen, please. It helps get the word out if you leave reviews, preferably 5 stars. Yes. Leave reviews so it gets us in the eyes and ears of more people. And I can have more guests that way. I can get in front of more audiences. You know how it goes. You know all the stuff that you hear from podcasts all the time. So anyways, share. Subscribe. There's a Patreon. You can support us that way. Patreon.com/FamilyCast. And yeah, that's about it. We're everywhere. We're available everywhere. So whether you listen on your way to work or in the gym or running or sitting around the house, I don't know. Thanks for listening. Share it with a friend. help us out. We're going to play a little bit of Pat Benatar to get into the episode because Joanne likes to sing like Pat Benatar. So, without any further ado, on the Family Cast, Food and Music is Life, yes?
Let's dig in.
But we're still outdoors. Al fresco.
Al fresco.
Al fresco in Kensington.
On the terraza.
And she is, Chef Joanne is of Italian descent, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so she chose Papaleco because she can't choose anything else. It's in her blood.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but instead of going to actually into Little Italy, we went to a quaint spot in Kensington because we could do this here easier. Anyways, today's guest. On the Family Cast, where food and music is life, yes? I have Chef Joanne Stabile.
That's me.
Do people say that last name like that?
That's, or do I you mean, correct that's them? How it's supposed to be said,
okay.
Yeah.
What do you, so, but then how do you say it
to people? That's how I say it
right.
To people, but my family says Stabile, and I'm like,
oh,
come
Stabile,
on, guys,
okay.
Right.
Oh, they're dropping the yeah. End marks. Okay,
Stabile.
So Chef Joanne Stabile on Instagram is just at Chef Joanne.
Yep.
Right.
No E, no, just J-O-A-N-N.
J-O-A-N-N. And it's one word, Joanne, not Joan.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. I'm sure you get that sometimes too, right? Uh-huh. But yeah, why are we here? Because I think that Joanne is one of those persons that can encapsulate food and music being life. As we had some good stuff in that other segment, but we're gonna recap it here in this first this intro to our living room episode, right? So on location, Kensington, Chef Joanne. Here we go. Who are you? Where are you from?
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's where we started. So, right. I was born in Vancouver, Washington. Lived there till I was a year old. Don't remember it, but it's just 20 minutes on the other side of the bridge from Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
So, not Canada. I'm not Canadian.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with being Canadian.
It's beautiful up there.
But I am definitely from the US of A, and when I was one, we moved to Plymouth, Michigan. We lived there for a few years, and then when I was three, we moved to San Francisco Bay Area. We lived in the East Bay, Walnut Creek, San Lorenzo, San Leandro, and then when I was eight was when I came to San Diego the first time.
The first time.
So okay. Just a couple, 2-3 years here, and then back to Michigan, Grand Rapids, for about 4 years, for the formative years, 11 to 15 years old. So definitely had some strong musical influences.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know,
Detroit,
that was when
Rock
I
City.
Really, that was when I really started to find my voice and my love of music. Like, I always loved music from a much, much younger age. I was in choirs and things like that when I was very small, when I was 3-4 years old. But it wasn't until, I want to say, Grand Rapids that I really started to, like, dig into my own personal tastes. And I discovered, not discovered, but, like, really fell in love with classic rock. This was the early 90s, so I was also really into grunge, Nirvana, obviously. You know, I was old enough and aware enough to, like, be a huge fan of Nirvana pre-Kurt Cobain's passing.
Right.
So I was definitely really affected by that, you know, so many emotions when you're that age. Mm-hmm. So I was, like, devastated.
Did you get to see them come through Michigan at all?
I definitely did not.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I was a little bit too young, and my parents weren't quite letting me go to those kinds of concerts when I was...
Because you were young.
Yeah. so around that age, like my first concert was Amy Grant.
Amy Grant, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. She was
and
huge.
Then, yeah, and then my second concert that I actually like still think of fondly was
Hold on.
Truck. was Clint Black, Tammy Wynette, and Randy Travis.
Oh, country.
It was a country show. My stepmom was really into country.
So we didn't talk about this, but was music a big role in your family life? Like your parents or your grandma?
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
On the Italian side?
We talked about it a little bit. So in the living room episode. But So my parents loved music, but none of them were particularly musical.
Right.
So
I mean, like in the house, was there?
There was always playing. Music on. Yeah. Always music
in the kitchen,
on.
Maybe?
Yep.
Or,
yeah. Okay. Oh, definitely. Yeah. My dad, his favorite band was the Moody Blues.
Okay, nice.
I would say. And he also was a really big Gordon Lightfoot fan for those...
Well, who isn't?
Like, deep down in the fucking archives of that.
I'm sure you probably have a few of those records in your collection.
It's a deep cut.
Yeah.
Gordon Lightfoot. My mom, Tina Turner, we talked about that. She loves Tina Turner. She'll still listen to that Santana album that mm-hmm. has all the... You know, with all the other artists, like the one with Rob Thomas. Smooth.
Oh, yeah. The more
like
recent one.
The quintessential, like, old lady.
Just like the ocean.
Yeah, exactly. The quintessential, like, mom vibes at the wedding when that song comes on. You know
like
what I'm saying?
Snap dancing.
Yeah, snap dancing. Okay. So you can picture that.
Mm-hmm. You got a Prince face mask.
Yeah, I do have a Prince face mask. I have a David Bowie one that's the same company.
Oh, okay.
It's cool.
So alternative music and some R&B.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my first CD, like actual CD, was Janet. Janet Jackson, the one where she's got her boobs covered by the guy's uh-huh. hands behind her. Uh-huh. Loved that. That was my first CD. Pre-CDs, I had a large collection of cassette tapes. I listened to a lot of... My brother was really into... my brother's 10 years older than me, so I got introduced to a lot of heavy metal. We listened to a lot of Guns N' Roses, a lot of Twisted Sister, Scorpion, okay. Rat, all of that stuff in the 80s
and 90s. So he
was
a Detroit rocker, a full-on Michigan rocker.
The whole house loved classic rock, but age 11 to 15 in Grand Rapids definitely found my own. Tori Amos, obsessed.
She's pretty awesome.
Are
you the youngest?
So obsessed with Tori Amos. I am the youngest, so, well, complicated family tree, but I'm okay. technically an only child. I have half siblings and step siblings.
Oh, okay.
But I only am the whole... product of my mother and father.
Oh, I see.
And then my dad, when he married my stepmom, they adopted two kids. So I do have adopted siblings that are younger than me.
Okay.
Unfortunately, when my dad passed away, my relationship with them and my stepmother pretty much dissolved. So,
At what point in your life did your dad pass away?
When I was 19.
Oh, yeah. It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really hard. Because I lived with him my whole life. My parents split up when I was really young. My mom was dealing with some addiction issues at the time that she's fortunately moved through. She moved through it very quickly.
Okay.
But yeah, we definitely. My dad was like my primary parent. Mm-hmm. My mom has always been endlessly supportive. Like if I was like, "Mom, I'm gonna hit the pole and be a stripper for the rest of my life," she would be like, "Oh, great job, honey! I made you a playlist." Like she's. Really supportive.
Regardless of what you're doing.
Yeah, she's definitely just believes in me, which is a nice feeling. But definitely growing up, I felt like she was more of a friend than a parent.
Oh, okay.
A lot of self-raising, you know, definitely. My dad worked all the time, and my stepmom did too. And
he was an entrepreneur.
We had a strained relationship, my stepmom and I. So I definitely... was a latchkey kid and took care of myself. Tori Amos got me through a lot of hard times.
Babysat by the records.
Yeah, babysat by the records for sure. And then we moved to San Diego after that, back to San Diego. And that was my last 2 years of high school. And then And then I moved back and forth between San Diego and the Bay Area as in my adult life.
How did the Bay Area come into, I mean, you had family up there still?
Yeah, my mom is from San Diego, but she's lived in the Bay since I was
okay.
a little girl.
Got it.
She never left.
Okay.
So all the bouncing around was with my dad.
Got it.
And my stepmom. And then my musical things, definitely like No Doubt was a huge thing for me. I think I talked about my favorite concert.
Being
towards
No Doubt.
The
end there.
Yeah.
But also you're skipping that really you started singing in a band.
Oh yeah, I did. I was in Product the band, a metal band. We did a lot of covers, a few originals. I was also in another band. I wasn't like an official, like full-time member, and I honestly don't even remember what they called themselves, or we called ourselves, but I do have a fond memory of like being in the quad in high school, and they let us play live in the quad with amplified music.
Yeah.
And I sang some Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah. That's good stuff for school.
Yeah.
I have a picture in my head of every high school in Detroit, like they're like pushing you into either being a rapper or a rock and roll artist. You know, like every single kid is a musician in Detroit, in my mind, you know.
Yeah,
I know
sure.
It's not like that, but in my mind, I like it like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds like they let you.
For sure. Well,
were you singing in both bands?
So Grand Rapids was actually where I started to find my voice, not Detroit. Detroit was when I was a wee one.
A wee one, okay.
But whatever, it's the same state.
A different kind of voice.
It's the same state.
Right.
And then in California, back in San Diego, was when I really started to get, I started to get into ska music in Michigan. And then, like, ska, punk rock, I was still deep in the classic rock roots, really cementing and deep diving on that. I was like a punk rock hippie.
Sure. No Doubt is a good bridge between the two.
Mm-hmm. You can picture me, like, definitely, I was, like, wearing, like, corduroy bell-bottoms, low-rise corduroy bell-bottoms, flip-flops, like, halter tops, little bandanas, had little, like, dreads with, like, hemp and beads and shit in my hair, but, like, also shaved underneath, so sometimes I'd put it in a mohawk.
So you could go to any concert.
Yeah.
That sounds a little bit like Gwen Stefani. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely was obsessed with Gwen.
Okay.
I definitely...
Can I find your records at Tower Records or anything like that? Can I find Product recordings?
Absolutely not.
Nothing, no VHS or anything?
No.
I gotta see
this. That my mom has some recordings of me singing San Diego this is another deep cut for those who have been in San Diego a long time, is Java Joe's. The original location of Java Joe's in OB, where there's a fucking Starbucks now. But Java Joe's... we had an open mic night.
Famous.
And Gregory Page and Steve Poltz were both regulars there.
Yeah.
And at that age, I would go to the open mic nights, and then I'd kind of sing a couple songs here and there with some of the mainstays there.
Cool.
But yeah, that was a lot of fun. So I have a recording of a performance there.
Nice.
Somewhere. My mom has it.
And this was with those guys or solo?
I had an accompaniment by unnamed artists, we'll just say.
Sure. Okay. Not Jewel.
Not Jewel.
Not Jason Mraz.
Yeah. I mean, I think that
but they were there.
Possibly Steve Poltz played on one of them.
Got it.
We had a lot. There was a lot of people that played guitar and banjo and keys and things that would be hanging out.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they
it was
would
the
hop
musician's
on,
hub.
Yep.
Right,
and
for
they
sure.
They would hop on the
Shout out
here
to Java Joe's for all you Ocean Beach people.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's cool. How did you start intersecting your culinary and music together? Or, you know, I know there was a stint of non-music, non-culinary business in between. There.
Yeah, yeah. I was in finance and the car business.
Yeah.
And I was singing. I had tried out for, like, the old man band, the top 40 cover band.
Oh, yeah.
Did, like, that was very short-lived. Like I said, I think I did.
When you say old man band, you mean, like... They're just doing country covers and stuff like that?
No, it's like top 40, '80s stuff. Like Pat Benatar and like stuff that, you know, you want to hear at a wedding, like a fun, upbeat.
Private event.
Yeah, Journey, Heart, stuff like that, yeah.
Cool. The stuff you really need to belt out.
Yeah. Okay. Just like Sheryl Crow, stuff like that, you know, like just the hits.
All you want to do is have some fun.
Soak up the sun, baby. Soak up that fucking sun.
Oh, man. Okay, cool. So
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, so that was...
You tried out and... play out live anywhere?
Yeah, no, I did play a few. And then, you know, I've hopped on some tracks here and there. Yeah, just didn't ever get a chance to. I think I started to say that, you know, as my event catering business, as I moved out of finance and then was in culinary and I started my own business. Yeah. And as that business picked up, I was finally in a place where, like, I would have the time and the mental capacity to do the music, but then I was always working on the weekends. Yeah. So it just never came to fruition. So the outlet was always via karaoke or at an event with you. That time that I remembered the kid was playing Bohemian Rhapsody in the other room, and you and Danica and Normandy and I were all singing. Yeah. We're all musical people.
Sometimes you can't help it. If something comes on, especially at, you know, weddings, everyone's jovial. And
I can't help it.
You can't help it. You can't help the funk. And then jumping back into, like, family life for yourself, did someone push you into the finance or push you into culinary school? Or, you know, I know your dad owns some businesses in San Diego.
Did he say,
hey, do you want to do these businesses with me? Or, like, anything? Was it anything like that?
No.
Where you got the knack for entrepreneurship?
I definitely got the knack from my family. Like, my father, everyone in my family, all my dad's siblings are self-employed. I think almost every single
one of them. These are the Stabiles?
Yes.
Okay.
I think almost every single one of them is self-employed. And so I get that from my family, from my dad's side of the family. But the car business and the finance thing came out of necessity, because when my dad passed away, I didn't have substantial income. I was living with my mom in the Bay Area and working part-time as a nanny and, like, throwing around the idea of going to community college the following semester. And then when he died, it was like, okay, like, my mom wasn't in any position to take care of me financially other than just offering me a room to stay in. So I had to figure out quickly how I was going to, like, pay for my life.
Right.
And I walked into a Toyota dealership and I filled out a job application, and the sales manager working at the time happened to be, like, this very sweet man that I still think very fondly of as a mentor in my life. His name's Nelson. And
hey, Nelson.
He always called me Sunshine. Hey, Sunshine. He's very sweet.
Back in the day when it was
older black man,
to do that,
just like the sweetest, grandpa energy, just a very kind human being.
It was a very appropriate relationship.
Yeah. And he really, really believed in me, like, right off the bat. He basically hired me on the spot. He was like, well, you need to go get this, like, sales license from the DMV, and, you know, like, there's some shit you got to take care of to be able to work here, but, like, we'll help you through it. And I started working, I want to say, within a couple of days of that.
Cool.
And then I was really good at selling cars, so they promoted me to the internet department. And that was when, like, just that
in the heyday of burgeoning internet.
Yeah. and that's where I learned how to do finance. And then I did finance from then on out for like the last, I worked in the car business for about 5 years, and the last 4 years of it were all in finance.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
so and this is in the Bay Area. Yes. Or
partially
both?
In the Bay Area, partially in San Diego.
Okay. Okay. Trying to locate. Okay.
The last job I had in the car business was Carl Berger Jeep Chrysler Dodge.
Carl Berger. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's off the 8 there?
Yep.
All right. This is not a commercial. Don't worry. Okay. When you were in the Bay Area, am I wrong? Were you engaged at one point? Semi-serious?
Yeah. So I was in a very serious relationship with a gentleman, Adrian, and we were, like, crazy about each other, but, like, literally it was a crazy relationship. It was very intense, and we moved back down here together after I finished culinary school, and it just wasn't a good fit anymore. Living in the city, he was born and raised in San Francisco, so it was a very difficult transition for him.
For him to come to San Diego.
And then he had a child with a previous relationship, and he really wanted to be a more present father. And they lived in Fresno, and I wasn't about to, like, pick up my life and move to Fresno after I had just spent all this money and time and energy on culinary school.
Yeah.
So we parted ways, and it was amicable, for sure. But yeah, that was, I mean, technically, he had asked me to marry him, and I said yes, but there was never a ring. I've never had a ring. No one's ever given me a ring, Josh. Not yet.
Okay. You heard it here.
Yeah, Eric.
Oh, okay. Shout out to Eric. No pressure, no pressure.
Eric with a K. Eric the Red.
Product with a K. Eric with a K. Yeah, Joanne with a K. Wait.
No, there's a theme.
Okay,
it's
yeah.
It's a soft K.
Oh, soft K. Yeah.
It's a silent K.
It's silent K. like not.
Yeah.
Knife. So, yeah. And then all of a sudden, you're done with finance with Toyota Company. And then you're like, I'm ready to start Chef Joanne customized catering.
Yeah,
let's go.
I went to culinary school as the economy was tanking because I was like, what am I going to do? My income, blah, blah, blah. Bankruptcy, filed for bankruptcy, got rid of my house,
oh,
got rid of my car. Yeah, I just let everything go and started completely from scratch.
Oh.
Went to culinary school. It was about a year and a half long program plus the externship,
mm-hmm.
and then transferred to, I was doing Whole Foods Market, South Market up there as my externship, and transferred to Hillcrest. And still did the same thing with them, catering and recipe development. And then slowly built up my catering business from there. But yeah, no one pushed me into catering or into culinary. That was definitely my own decision. And then same with the car business. I was like, how can I make the most money without an education? Selling something.
Oh, okay.
And I knew I didn't want to sit in an office. Which, ironically, working in finance, I did. But, like, in sales, you know, you're walking that lot every day.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so it was something, like, you know, with most sales jobs, you don't have to have any your sort of special education. You just have to be good at selling something.
You have to have a personality, I think.
Yeah.
And you, I think that, well, I know you, but, like, You have a sales personality for sure, or maybe that developed over owning business too. But
I definitely, you know. I mean, it's for me, it's like I believed in the product that we were selling,
right.
And Toyotas are awesome. And then when I was in finance for Jeep, Chrysler, Dodge, like we had some really aggressive car loans and awesome warranties and things like that. So I believed in it.
Yeah.
And I think that I was good at it because I wasn't corny.
Oh, yeah.
I tried really hard to not be corny. I always was, like, very real to people, and I tried really hard to never sell anything that I did not believe in.
Exactly. Like, when you believe in a product or love something on the menu, for example, for servers or bartenders,
that's
what you're going to sell more of. Like,
yep.
I teach that, like, just pick one thing on the menu that you like, and go, that's what you'll sell the most of.
Yep.
Whether I don't know about cars, but, like, I know food.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Yep.
What about your tattoo life? How did this all come about?
Oh, I always wanted to get tattoos.
So you started with, what did you start with?
This was my first one on my wrist. It's a Japanese kanji symbol for those of you listening. And it means strong will.
Strong will, okay.
Or ambition. So that was my very first tattoo when I was 19. And then...
it built from there?
It got a lot bigger from there.
Right, okay.
This one I started in culinary school. All of my major tattoos are... from San Francisco.
Okay.
All the big ones. So
and they're all meaningful.
This my full sleeve is Dia de los Muertos,
mm-hmm.
and it's just like representative of loved ones that we've lost. And you know, I growing up Catholic, I just really gravitated more towards the Dia de los Muertos vibe because the Roman Catholic thing when people die is just like this mournful thing and it's just like really sad and awful and like I really liked the Mexican Catholic, you know, like let's celebrate the people their lives and how much we love them and give them offerings instead of like having this awful like viewing of the body and then just terrible thing and so this really resonated with me and then the Sacred Heart is just kind of like an accompaniment
to the
sleeve.
And we'll get into more of Joanne's spiritual side later on in the episode.
Yes,
like
exactly.
As we talk about her endeavors.
Yes.
Stuff like that. But that's cool. So starting at 19 and then I mean I think those play a role in your the imagery of your businesses,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that.
Definitely.
So yeah. I didn't touch on your musical career back to your instruments that you play.
What's the clarinet.
The clarinet. Yes. Also, and then there's guitars and everything all over your house. Like, yes. It's a very musical household that you
it
have,
is.
Right?
Yes.
I think I would say your house. Yeah, you do have crystals and art and stuff like that. But I think your house is focused around music. Also, when you walk in, it's first thing I noticed was the record collection.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
musical instruments. But you also clarinet. I didn't see a clarinet, but I heard that you play.
Haven't played it in a long time. Right. But yeah, that is what. That was the first instrument I ever learned how to play. And I learned how to read music, so I can tool around on the piano, and I can play some chords on the guitar and things like that. The guitar and the banjo and the drums at my house are actually my boyfriend's.
Okay. He's a musician?
Yeah, he's a very, very skilled musician.
Oh, we should all jam sometime.
Yeah, I would love that. He loves the banjo. That's his main focus.
Okay.
But he can play everything. Okay. He can play percussion. He can play all the string instruments for the most part. Like, he can even tool around on cellos and violins and stuff. He's just a very...
Yeah. I feel like if musical. You can play banjo in particular, you could play a lot of other instruments. Because it's not like any other instrument.
Really. Yeah, it's
like,
super
it's,
unique.
It's crazy. You know, it's got a drum on it, for God's sakes.
I had no idea how complex banjo is.
Right, especially
instrument.
If you're good. Okay. We've moved inside. It's getting too sunny for me. I'm melting.
Roasty toasty.
No, that's good. So she's in culinary school.
Yeah, I was in culinary school. Or no, I think what I was saying is when I was starting the business, I just didn't have the mental capacity or the energy to like do that and pursue like some sort of singing thing.
Right, right.
So I had tried out for, actually when I was still in the car business, I had tried out for like a top 40, I had done some gigs with like a top 40 wedding cover band thing. That was really fun, but it was short lived.
Like you were a wedding singer?
Yeah,
there
totally.
You go. Okay.
Yeah, it was short lived though. And then, you know, like here and there, like my friends that have bands, like, you know, like they'll do like a cover song in their set and I'll sing with them.
Okay.
I briefly dated this guy that's got like his name's Aiden from Johnny Dudley Trio, but they have like a cool like rockabilly vibe. And, you know, I sang like a song with them once or twice at the Bar San Nombre down the street here in Chula Vista.
It's very close to here.
Yeah, and it was like literally impromptu. It wasn't anything that was like rehearsed. Mm-hmm. And that's like how it's kind of gone over the years, is like random things like that. Or I've had things where like a friend wanted a female vocal on a recording and they've reached out to me like just to do one specific thing. Like, sing this and they'll sing it to me and just sing it in your voice and like make it sound more ethereal, and then like we'll record it and that's the end.
So you still got the pipes then. You're still doing it. Like,
I'm trying.
The dream is not squashed.
No, the dream isn't squashed. Okay. Like, I love it. And
hit me. Give me something.
And I think
sing.
No pressure.
No pressure.
I'm a little shy with that.
I know. I actually am too, after, you know, even after everything, I still get stage fright.
Whatever. Yeah.
It's fine. It's natural, right?
Yeah.
But then, you know, so all of a sudden you step into a karaoke room and you're like, you know,
totally.
This is perfect. You know, I'm all about it.
I know. It's so funny how that changes. I mean, like a little bit of alcohol or whatever can help a little bit too. But
no, I'm thinking you like walk there, you kick open the door at the, you know, one of the karaoke rooms. I'm here. Give me the mic.
Give me the mic. Yeah.
turn it up. So,
yeah.
So this is like, you were still like, I guess that all culinary and kind of that music wedding singer career, that was like what, you were like 19, 20, 21-ish?
No, so that was when I started in the car business. And then...
Oh, yeah, okay.
So at that point, I was, let's see, how old am I now?
26?
I was, yeah, right. I'll be 39 in June.
Okay.
But... Yeah, I mean, it was my early 20s. So I want to say like 22 to 25-ish was around that time frame. So yeah, because I've had I guess like maybe a little bit more like mid-20s, like 24, 25, 26. Anyway.
That's when we're invincible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Anything's possible. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So, but it was just like, oh, I know where I was going before we switched to the new track. So... When I finally started to have a grasp on the business, and I could have had more energy and more mental capacity to sing more, it was like the business was busy on the weekends. So it was just one of those things where I was like, okay, now that I like feel like I could tackle this again and want to do it again, then I was like, well, I could never commit to a Saturday night.
It's the classic pull of, you know, being a professional person or being a musician or being a professional musician or whatever, you know, like, what should I do? What path do I take?
Yeah. Right? So I just didn't. And I would just go, you know, do the random stuff here and there.
But you really dug into your food career. Like, right?
Definitely.
And this was in the Bay Area still, right?
No, this was down here.
Okay, down here.
Yeah. I finished culinary school and came right back to San Diego. Okay. Because after my externship, because it was so much cheaper to live down here, especially at that time, this was 13 years ago. So I got a really cute 2-bedroom house in Normal Heights, like beautiful craftsman house. And it was like $1,300 a month, you know, and at the time, actually the Bay Area was, or San Francisco, even living in the city where I was, wasn't nearly as expensive as it is today.
Right.
Not even close.
World famous expensive.
Yeah. But I just felt like at the time, I felt like it was going to be so much easier for me to, for me to start a business really here versus up there.
Yeah.
Like not just financially, but like competition wise as well. You know, I was, and it took a long time for me to get to where, I mean, it's taken me 13 years and I was not an experienced business person. I literally bullshitted my way. I mean, like I had the skills to cook, but like business wise,
right.
I figured everything out as I went. And I had to ask a lot of people that I respected questions and I made a lot of mistakes and fortunately, I hope I learned from most of them. But yeah, I mean, I literally just like very slowly built up the catering business. Yeah. Very, very, very slowly. Like I was working part-time at Whole Foods, working part-time as a private chef for Family Rancho Santa Fe, and then picking up gigs here and there for like my friend that wanted cookies for her birthday party, you know, just like really small time stuff, really small time stuff, like making trays of enchiladas for my friend's graduation or just little tiny things here and there. And then, you know, slowly but surely I'd have more gigs.
Yeah. Can you talk about a failure you had in the early days of catering or or chefing?
Oh gosh, yeah.
I mean, because obviously you've survived. So
yeah.
Can you talk about like something you really, I don't know, overshot or...
So I would say like one of the crappiest things that like happened like while at an event out at a cooking thing was like working with an electric stovetop and thinking it was off or it was on or something, like something happened and like the counter and the stovetop were really cold and I took out a hot piece of glass from the oven and quickly learned
quickly learned
that you don't put hot glass on cold electric stovetop it shattered not the stovetop fortunately but it shattered the glass and it the lamb entree was in the glass.
Ooh,
and dang. It was one of my first like gigs in Rancho Santa Fe and like it sucked really bad. But I've always been resourceful.
Yeah,
so we just extended appetizer hour and luckily found like some things in the client's freezer that we were able to like extend the appetizer hour with. And luckily at that point I had a helper. And so I think either she or I ran to the store and luckily they weren't in like deep Rancho Santa Fe. Like it was kind of near that like funky little grocery store that they have and they happen to have lamb chops.
Oh, there you go.
And so I was able to buy it and, you know, stall.
Go from there, yeah.
Stall and we figured it out. That was an epic fail situation as far as like in the heat of cooking thing. You know, we've burned things from time to time. Like even actually somewhat recently, I still beat myself up about it. I overcooked a prime rib, which those of you that have had my cooking, you know I don't mess up meat. And so that was it still like haunts my dreams. Yeah. I overcooked a 5-pound prime rib.
Yeah.
And it was an event that I actually didn't go to. It was something I was cooking everything ahead of time, putting it in the hot box and catering at. We were sending the food out. I was at one event and sending this food with my other team that was at a different event. And I just overcooked the prime rib. And then it sat in the hot box. It was just, yeah. Luckily, the client didn't. If they did notice, they didn't say anything. And in fact, the next day were like, that was so amazing, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's just like, I still think about it. And this was like 5 months ago.
Yeah. The behind the scenes or what the eater doesn't always know about, like what the kitchen does to the.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you can put different things on it to fix or.
Totally. Or, I mean, we garnished it and there was a sauce. Like,
that was amazing.
Yeah. And yeah.
Pulled
but
it off.
It was definitely like. Not medium rare. We'll just say that. Yeah. Definitely not medium rare.
How did you get into cooking all the stuff like private diets and like all the special diet, prepared
yeah.
with a purpose?
And... Yeah. So my meal prep company is like, has been for some time now, all paleo and Whole30 and stuff. So yeah. like the primal diet or whatever you want to call it.
Did you get into that because you're on that diet?
Yeah. So my mom has a lot of dietary issues. And so when I was in culinary school, I was kind of like, it was at the top of my mind. And, I had been a vegan vegetarian when I was in high school. Mm. Not anymore. Definitely carnivore now. But, I like knew about special diets and I knew about gluten-free and I knew about people having issues with soy and all of those things. And this was in like 2007, 2008. So I think that all of those were kind of coming to light. And then a few years later, the whole paleo diet thing. But I got into cooking that way, mostly because of my interest for my mom and myself, but also because one of my first private chef clients, they were gluten-free, soy-free, and dairy-free. And so for 3 years, I cooked for them part-time. And so I got very familiar and comfortable with modifying standard recipes to make them gluten-free or soy-free or dairy-free. And, and it just became kind of my niche. And then, you know, now it's like definitely the catering business is going to be gluten-free and organic, but... You know, prepared with purpose is the outlet for the super customized stuff. And as a whole, that company is just paleo. But now we're creating a whole new tab on the website where people can pay more like a private chef fee and get their super customized, like whatever. But I kind of by accident became like the, you know, specialized diet chef of San Diego. And
it's something you don't always want to do.
Not super fun, to be honest.
You mean because it's so specific?
Clients tend to be like, I mean, they're really needy.
Because that diet's not necessarily like because of allergies or health reasons. That's more of like a conscious diet effort, right?
For sure.
Right?
But
so it's not, they're not going to die if they get...
No. Not the most people. But I do have some clients still... that we make special food for, even more specialized than what we offer with Prepared with Purpose or gluten-free with Chef Joanne Catering, but like really specific, like no garlic and no sesame and no whatever, like random things that I don't like or whatever. It's just like some things that are really, really specific. And a lot of those clients tend to be like texting or calling or like very high maintenance in a number of ways. And it's just something that I'm like really trying to not have be the forefront of the business at all anymore. Like it's not like I want more people to like love and respect nutritious, nutrient-dense foods, but I don't want it to be, like, some rabbit hole thing where people only hire Chef Joanne to do, like, some specific thing. Like, I want to be more accessible.
You
want to
get hired
more...
because it's delicious?
And... Yeah, I want... Exactly. Yeah, I want people to hire me because the food is delicious and organic. Uh-huh. And that's the main thing.
Yeah. What's your favorite thing that you make?
Oh, gosh. Those pulled pork jicama tacos.
Yeah.
I mean, they're super delicious and obviously a crowd pleaser. And then I really dig the shrimp toast with the remoulade. Mm-hmm. That's a new one as of like a year ago.
Shout out, Kelly.
Yeah. Remoulade squad.
Yeah.
And then I just, you know, honestly, like, I just love classic things. Mm-hmm. I love classic things. I love simple things. I love rustic presentation. And mm-hmm. I just like really high quality ingredients to speak for themselves.
Is that how you would like kind of describe your business in a nutshell? Like, to, if you met somebody, like elevator pitch, Chef Joanne. Is it called Chef Joanne Catering? I know you're...
Chef Joanne Customized Catering. Customized Catering. Is technically the name. Yeah. You know, I think I talked to you like a year ago. I was tossing around the idea of like CJ and Co. But yeah, right now Chef Joanne Customized Catering.
Yeah, so plated with the prepared with the purpose. Mm-hmm. Chef Joanne Customized Catering and
prepared with a purpose
and what's next? What's the next venture?
Venues by Chef Joanne.
So the businesses are nonstop out of this lady right here. How did you get into like the venue game? Like, not just a venue game, but like, you know, obviously we work at a lot of venues.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I don't know if it's in the musical blood interest. And I know you travel a lot.
I do.
Yeah.
So I traveled a lot as a little girl. My dad was afraid of flying, so we would drive everywhere in a motorhome.
Okay.
So I've seen almost all of the United States previous to my adult life. And then in my adult life, I started traveling a lot internationally in my early 30s. And mostly to Europe. And then I've been to Mexico a bunch, obviously. And then, but that's it. I have yet to have gone to any other of the other continents.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. I haven't been to South America yet. I haven't been to, so I've been to North America, Central America, and Europe.
Are you planning on other continents?
Or? Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. I want to do it all.
Yes, we want to see the universe.
Yeah, I'd love to go to Africa next. That would be high on the list.
Awesome.
But yeah, through traveling, I realized how much I appreciate an experience.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond just a meal in a restaurant, like... A lot of the Airbnbs in Europe are inherently like a bed and breakfast model. So it's not just like a lot of the Airbnbs in the States where you like get the code from the person via email and like you just go in and let yourself in or whatever. It's like pretty hands off. Like I specifically chose
like places. Not interactive.
Yeah. I always have chosen places. Even when I travel in the States, really, I try to choose places that are in a home
mm-hmm.
with a host. But in Europe, all the ones that were a room and a home, they also provided breakfast. That was just, you know, that's just the hospitality of that culture. And so I remember one of the first ones was in Italy, in this really small village called Borgo Varese. And it's in northwestern Italy, about an hour from Genoa. Very close to France. And it's on the Ligurian Sea, which is an offshoot of the Mediterranean in the north side. And it is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life. Mm. And definitely one of my favorite parts of Italy. And I was there with my former partner and we woke up. Our room was literally in a cave. It was carved. It was a bedroom that was her home. Her whole home was in the side of a cliff.
Oh.
And overlooking the sea.
That sounds amazing.
And so our room was carved into, you know, the cliffside. There were like a couple of built walls, but most of the walls were the fucking rocks.
Right.
And it was just really cool. It was really well decorated. It was like definitely like my vibes. There's like Frida Kahlo and like Dia de los Muertos stuff everywhere. The woman that owned it was young, is young. She's like my age. And this was, you know, almost 10 years ago. So it's just a really cool experience. Mm-hmm. And she made us breakfast. And so we're sitting out on her kind of, I'll call it a lanai, a terraza. So we were in Italy. So it was the terraza, the terrace. And it was just this beautiful dining table with like an old grandma linen on it. And she had her nice little china. And she made us coffee and like served us some pastries and yogurt. And it was a very simple breakfast, but like,
that sounds wonderful.
It was incredible. And like fresh squeezed juice. And we're looking out at the sea on top of this gigantic cliff. And it was just so epic. And I was just like, gosh, like I could do, like I could create these kinds of experiences for people. Like I love, that's the whole reason why I started a catering business, is that I just love to give people an experience. Mm-hmm. It's not so much for my love of cooking. It's more the experience of the, of an event.
Right.
So of an intimate dinner party or of a wedding or of a gala, it's like to create the whole experience. And through a venue of my own, I can have, you know, I can have my hands in all of the elements of the experience.
Yeah.
So like from the chair you're sitting in to the fork you're eating with, to the music that's playing, to the smell that's in the air, to the vibe that the property has. You know, I, as you can see, I have a lot of crystals.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I am very, very purposeful with the way that I create. I try to create mm-hmm. something to, mm-hmm. and I try to work with my clients, you know, even when it's just the catering and I'm in their home, not mm-hmm. in my space. I try to work with them to make the experience special for them, mm-hmm. even though it's in a space that they're in every day.
Yeah.
Like to create something unique for them in their own space is something really exciting for me as well.
I noticed that when I you know, I worked events with you a lot, and a lot of them are in homes, in mm-hmm. people's in their own houses.
Yeah.
Like, and then so you have to transform, you have to customize their own house to the event, right?
Yeah.
That's probably really fun for you.
It is super fun. Yeah.
And so it's different every time.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Change of scenery every time.
Different,
it's like
different kitchen, different.
Yeah. It's perfect, you know, for my Gemini brain. Yeah. It's like variety is the spice of life. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So I get to like feed all these different parts of my personality with that.
Now that you own, you know, the businesses, plural, you know, venue and prepared with a purpose, meal planning and custom catering, do you still find yourself actually hands-on cooking a lot of the food too? Like getting in there and like, you know?
It depends on the event. Mm-hmm. Honestly, no. To be transparent, I don't cook nearly as much as I used to. But that's what I have a great team for.
Right.
You know, that's what I have you when you're available, not as much anymore. But, you know, that was one of the good things that came out of COVID was I could have Chef Josh help me more often.
It's fun because I like, you know, I do like cooking in all those different houses and stuff like
for
that.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, it's not to say that I don't enjoy the cooking, but for me, it's more important for the growth of the business to have a really strong connection with the clients.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I find that if I'm able to conceptualize the menu and articulate to the team the vision, then everyone has the best experience. And honestly, you know, like a lot of the people that work with me are more skilled at certain things than I am, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that I pride myself on that element of my, you know, I guess my managerial skills, if you will, is mm-hmm. like, I want to employ people that are more skilled than I am, because that, like, I can't do everything.
Right.
And I would rather be really, really good at the connection element and the creation of the experience and have the amazing food be created by the team. That's where they get their joy from.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely. I feel that too. Yeah. I mean, it's good to have a team. I have a team of chefs and other positions, but I guess I could do everything, but it's better to have people with you who are very capable, and empowering them to, you know, do it, and trusting them that they can do the event if you're not there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Make it good. Or, yeah.
You know, yeah, so that's a good thing. Are you at a good point in your career in that, you know, team-wise that you, you know, I guess you feel comfortable to expand because you got the venue business going. So that's going to be a thing, you know?
Yeah. My motto is to just say yes and figure it out.
How many Joannes can you know, clone? You know, Chef Joannes to be there. But what's it like? What is it like being a woman in the industry? Like, have you ran into any adversity in that sense?
That's an interesting question. So I think
anywhere from culinary school till now.
Yeah. So I think. Fortunately for me, with being self-employed, not too much lately. But there are definitely times, like, you know, just out and about in the world. For example, like, I'll use a specific example.
Please use specific names of people.
I was at the Whistle Stop, obviously pre-COVID times. I was at the Whistle Stop, a fun dive bar in South Park. And I was talking to somebody, and he had like a chef on his shirt, and I didn't recognize who it was, and it was Chef Marco Piro White.
Oh, yeah.
And
the one who just made all those woman comments.
Yeah. So I didn't know who it was, and we were talking, and I had said I was a chef, and he was like, "What kind of a chef are you? You don't know who this is," and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, "Well, I'm not a restaurant chef. Like, I'm a catering chef, and honestly, like, I'm really the owner of the business. I don't do, even at that time, I was trying to step away from doing so much of the cooking, but I've definitely, over the years, gotten, like, you're not a real chef, because you're a caterer."
Oh, because you haven't worked in the restaurants around San Diego and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I definitely worked in restaurants, but whatever. It doesn't matter if I ever worked in a restaurant or not.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, I guess I don't know, like, who makes up the rules of what constitutes you being a real chef. Like, I have an associate's and a bachelor's degree in culinary arts and culinary management. Does that make me a real chef, or does the experience of the last 13 years make me a real chef? Or maybe I don't even call myself a chef at all anymore, because my concern is curating a team of great chefs and being more of the overall, the architect, and if you will, of the project. So,
well, chef means chief. And I think that if you're doing that, you know, to your team, you're a good leader, you know. Yeah. Chefing is cooking, yes, but, like, a good chef is also in charge of everything.
Yeah,
in charge of the team, in charge of all the numbers,
in
charge of
all the,
or, you know, everything. So it's not just people. Some people, maybe people who don't know, think chef is just, like, you know, cooking in front of a camera or something like that. But there's all the other stuff. Obviously, it's like running, being the chief.
Yeah. So definitely, like, I don't know. I'm sure that part of it was, you know, being a woman, but also I think a part of it was, like, catering versus restaurant chef. Definitely I got some snobbery around that.
I'm catering, you know, like,
I'm
not in a restaurant, and you know,
so I don't know, but I guess I do, you know, like,
what's your comeback or whatever, how do you combat those comments? Like,
oh, I just say, well, I don't know,
hey, tell me about your business.
It's just like, I like money and flexibility in my lifestyle, and I don't think being a restaurant chef affords you that. You know, I think a restaurant chef is, I mean, people ask me all the time, how come you don't open your own restaurant? Because I'm already married to my job enough. Like, I don't want to have to be somewhere all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that being a restaurant chef, you really are committed to being at that building, in that building,
it for definitely takes
a minimum of 50 hours a week.
It takes someone who's willing to be around the spot, be there. Yeah,
and I like the autonomy that I have with the catering business, and I like the ability to say no to things when I want to. And mm-hmm. you know, if we have a really busy weekend, not like flipping out about, you know, oh, we've got, you know, this big party coming in, and then the ball game ends, and we've got like 100 covers that we're turning away because we had, you know, whatever. Yeah. Like, I don't, like, that's just not something that I care to have in my energetic field.
It is a different, it's definitely a different ball game.
For sure,
as you're saying. But I totally understand.
And to each their own. Like, I can definitely, like, I can see and understand the excitement in that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But that's just not the life that I'm trying to build for myself. So I mm-hmm. just don't have any interest in it. And I love that I love the flexibility that catering affords me. And I also, you know, have, again, really trying to create a situation where my team is able to execute these things. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you and got a good team. And we can do five events in a day.
That
would be.
Oh, that's the goal? Okay.
That would be the dream, like having a business that is expanding.
Someday.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, we'll have one at each venue and then a couple private parties. And
so how many, on the venue side, now that you're doing, you know, venues, plural, by a joint, you know, how many are you plural? How many are in that plural?
Well, they're all in the beginning stages, really, but there's three. The one in Joshua Tree is a very well established Airbnb, but she gets requests, the owner of the property, very regularly, and especially now that we're kind of on the other side of this whole COVID thing. She gets requests very regularly to, oh, can we have a small wedding, or like, can we have a dinner party or whatever? And so now we've got this, you know, plug and play package, so to speak, that we can just hand off to anyone mm-hmm. that's interested. And like, this is everything that is included. And then the only thing that needs to be decided on is the specific menu that's served. But like, all of the other elements are already figured out, like down to the porta potties and the dish rental. What I mean? Okay. Like everything is factored into these packages. So we can just say, yeah, here's this.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Okay.
Nice. And then, so that one, that's an easy thing that'll start generating some events for us really quickly, because she's already, you know, she's booked like through December in Joshua Tree with just rentals. But a lot of there are quite a few of those people that are interested in having events. And then Victoria Ranch, which is the property in Vista that I will be mostly... That will be the most hands-on involvement
mm-hmm.
For me. And that one is going to be hopefully up and running as an Airbnb and small venue for 20 to 30 people by this summer. And then the goal is to scale out some of the rest of the land for larger events by mm-hmm. winter.
Awesome. And then East County?
And then East County, that's an Alpine Bliss Ranch. Awesome, just like... tombstone, ghost town facade, cool old west themed place that'll be perfect for like, I'm picturing small weddings and birthday parties. Mm-hmm. Like it could be a perfect birthday party for an adult or a child. And I would say the sweet spot for that place is like 40 to 50 people.
Nice.
Headcount wise.
And these are all available through like your website?
Or
is it separate?
Yeah, it'll all be... There'll be a link on the website on chefjoanne.com that link to the venues, and then each venue will have like its own landing page.
That's so great.
They all have their own Instagram right now, but again, super beginning stages for sure. Victoria Ranch and Bliss Ranch.
And you provide the entertainment. You're singing at all.
Yeah. If it's not me singing in person, it's me singing on a video.
It'll just be a hologram.
Hologram of Chef Joanne.
Like, what's your...
Singing Sweet Child of Mine.
There you go. What's your favorite record in your collection over there? Like, our favorite album. I mean,
so my
it's a pretty
favorite,
big collection, honestly.
It is. I mean, Fleetwood Mac Rumors, listening to that on vinyl is really special.
Sounds good.
But one of my favorite things is I have these, like, boxed sets of records, like really old-timey ones that I got at an estate sale. And there's like a swing one, mm-hmm. and it's like a decade of records. And it was just all the top hits from like the 1930s to of the 1930s.
Uh-huh. And it's just like, you can hear the scratches.
It's so
like,
cool.
Yeah, it's just fun to, and that's the old, like the heavy records, right? Like
yeah, the, super
the
real, heavy.
The ones that break. Yeah, that's fun. So then you dance around with your chihuahuas and stuff like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, totally.
How'd you end up with these three dogs?
by accident.
By accident.
We actually have a Sunday morning ritual. We haven't done it in a couple Sundays now, but we listen to Jump in the Line by Harry Belafonte on Sunday mornings.
With the dogs?
Yeah, with the dogs. Okay. We do a little conga line with the dogs.
But are they dancing dogs?
Yeah, but Axel, my little elder pup here, he's 15.
What's Axel's full name?
Axel Rose.
Axel Rose of maybe you've heard of him.
Yeah. So Axel's 15 and I got him in front of Target in Mission Valley from this lady that had like a bunch of chihuahuas in a wagon. And she was like, my dog got pregnant on accident. Help. And so I like took Axel.
Okay.
With her permission.
Axel Rose is over here chilling next to me on the couch.
Yeah. He's very sleepy. He's 15. And then Chloe Bell here, she, is a rescue. I got her when she was 2 mm-hmm. from Second Chance Dog Rescue. She's such a sweet girl and she's 10 years old. And then the youngest one, Nala,
right here, on the other side. On my left.
Nala, very similar to Axel. I was at the Presidio Park just walking around one day. And this girl had these two puppies on the ground, and I could just tell by looking at them that they were too young to be, like, out in the world. Mm. And I was like, hey, you know, like, they can get parvo if they haven't had any shots or anything yet. You know, you want to be really careful with dogs that little. And she was like, I don't know what to do. I thought my dog was spayed, and she wasn't. And she got pregnant with the neighbor's, from the neighbor's dog. Oh. And so she had Nala and her brother, and I gave her $100 and took Nala off her hands.
Nice. That's cool.
So that's how I acquired.
Look at you, dog expert, knowing parvo and everything. Like,
yeah.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, so it sounds like you've had a good, I mean, I don't know. It seems like you have fun doing what you do.
I do have fun.
You do have fun. That's good. As long as you're still having fun, I know the venues are next, but like, what do you see like happening with the company and your singing career and your chihuahua career. Line of products.
Yeah.
Always, you know, Animeals. I don't know. Animeals. We just Animeals, made this up.
Yeah. So definitely with the venues and the catering business, ultimately what I'm trying to do is create a legacy business. Mm-hmm. So I would like Chef Joanne Customized Catering or whatever it's called, plus the venues to be an opportunity to empower people way down the line from now. Mm-hmm. So like having a business where everyone that is employed is a part of it, the company, you know what I mean? Like maybe even like a co-op situation where employees have sweat equity and, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, like something where people feel like they're a part of something important and they're empowered and they're paid well and they're, you know, making a really comfortable living for them and their family and able to like lead lives that they're happy about and proud of mm-hmm. and working with a company that they're proud to work with and be a part of. That's the goal.
It must be. And when I go into your kitchen, you have all ladies, mm-hmm. you know, working there.
Yeah.
Is that by design?
Definitely.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think that's awesome. Cause there's no, you know, I mean, I don't know if they all get along. It's different if I walk in, they're all, hi, you know, whatever, but who knows what's happening beforehand. But
for the most part, like, everything's pretty good. There's very little drama. I mean, there's like a little bit of little tiny things here and there, but there's mm-hmm. very little drama. There's no yelling.
Uh-huh.
There's zero yelling.
You don't allow it.
It's just not something that happens.
Good. Well, that's good. You got the right people then.
Yeah. Nobody yells at each other. I don't yell at anyone. I mean, I've had to have some stern conversations over the years, but I've definitely never yelled at anyone. Mm-hmm. At least I hope I haven't. But it's just like, I don't it's not so important to me that I'm like, oh, I'm the boss and like do as I say and da 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 da. It's just like, hey, like let's all just work together and communicate to like make this thing as awesome as we can, because the more awesome it becomes, the more I can pay everyone and the happier everyone is. You know,
more venues I can open.
Yeah, the more like let's just like keep the customers happy and like make everything great, because the more things that are great, the more money comes in, the more people come back, mm-hmm. and the more I can give to all of you is my kind of philosophy.
That's a good philosophy. What's your favorite place to eat in San Diego?
Ooh, so my favorite high-end fine dining is Cowboy Star.
Cowboy Star, okay.
For sure. I love steak. And I just love the ambiance of that mm-hmm. place. And mm-hmm. they make a great old-fashioned. The best old-fashioned in San Diego.
Dang, shout out to Cowboy Star.
Yeah, so good. My favorite old-school steakhouse used to be Albee's, but Cafe LeMay's here mm-hmm. in National City. Awesome old-school red leather booths, dark velvet paintings, you know, like...
So you like a whole
A 70-year-old yeah. man singing, like, cover songs uh-huh. at the, like... little tiny stage that they have, you know, singing like crooner songs.
You can get up there.
That like that in the Red Fox Room, kind of similar vibes. Uh-huh. RIP Red Fox Room and Albee's. I love those kinds of places. And then as far as just like my favorite day-to-day casual dining is Tender Greens, because it's healthy and clean and I feel good special when I eat there stuff, yeah. And then...
Actually, the food tastes good there, too.
It's really good, yeah. And then my favorite, like hole-in-the-wall naughty spot is definitely Los Cuatro Mil Bus.
Nice.
I mean...
Shout out tacos and lard and beans. And
yeah. And then speaking of Barrio Logan, Chichia in the Italian mm-hmm. restaurant across from Barrio Dog. That place is fantastic. And I love the ambiance there, too. Like, the food could probably be mediocre. I mean, I'd argue that the best pizza is Buona Forchetta, but...
It's a good argument.
The ambiance at Chichia is, like, it's incredible.
Good. That's awesome. Because, you know, people are skeptical if an Italian place opens up in the barrio, or vice versa, if a Mexican place opens somewhere else, but...
Yeah, totally.
That's awesome that they're... I think everyone likes that place. Congrats to you, Chichia, you know.
Yeah, that place is super good.
For being right there, right across from a hot dog place. Yeah. That's totally. Awesome. Would you ever do, I know you don't want to open like a restaurant, but would you ever do something like a small hole in the wall kind of like fun thing so you could showcase your international cuisines and all this kind of stuff?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, just have a spot like that.
You know what I've always thought would be fun is to do a place where it's literally just one dish a night. Mm. Like a family style thing where people can just come in. And I think it was kind of the original, probably the original idea that Thomas Keller had for Ad Hoc in Napa. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, obviously it's Thomas Keller, so it's, like, turned into, like, this thing. But, like, the idea of just literally having one thing on the menu, it's served family style, you have two seatings a day or a night, an evening, and that's it. And then the menu's different the next day.
Like, and you can pair it with some...
That would be fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like, I would be super... I would be down to do something like that where it's just open, you know, like, a few nights a week.
Yeah.
Like, we'd be open Mondays so the service industry people can come in and hang out. And then, you know, maybe like Thursday, Saturday, Monday or something like that.
Yeah, just whenever you want.
Yeah.
Making our own schedule again here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That seems like something doable, you know. Don't steal that idea, you know.
But, I mean, I think, you know, there are places that started out as catering companies that became restaurants, and they are successful right. because right. they had that Hannah's Gourmet on Adams Avenue. Mm-hmm. Also Cafe 21 mm-hmm. on Adams Avenue, both catering companies, very good catering companies. And then they just were like, well, we already have this kitchen with like a little bit of a storefront.
Right.
Why not turn it into right. like a tasting room / mini restaurant?
And Hannah's is really good.
Hannah's too. Is really good, and their menu is very simple. Cafe 21's really gone like really crazy with yeah, they've got a lot of food on their menu now. But But when they first started out as a restaurant, when they had transitioned from just as catering to a restaurant, the menu was pretty small and simple.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the food is really good. And I love Hannah's Gourmet because it's simple, but like surprising for the neighborhood. And then when you go in, when you're inside, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
You feel like you're in Europe.
I am impressed with really Hannah's cool. Because, I mean, I like being surprised, I think, by when food is, I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't go in anywhere expecting that food will be bad. But, like, I was surprised that Hannah's Gourmet had really good chilaquiles, for example. And I was like, what?
And then Moroccan chicken.
Yeah, I was like.
At the same time.
Hannah, where are you from? You know, like.
Yeah.
But, like, chilaquiles right there, you know, that part of Adams Avenue. I mean, we're talking pretty localized here. But, like, if you go into a place and you find something that you're not expecting, I think that's a good experience.
Totally.
So, like, at your venues, if you end up doing some kind of B&B thing and you show, you know, you're from Italy? Oh, I know just what I'm going to feed you.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the music we're going to play, and here's the wine selection for your stay, like this kind of stuff.
Because
you're curating their experience, right?
And that's absolutely and what I'm trying to
but
do.
But that's one thing that's cool about being a catering chef is that you can totally curate the heck out of everything, I think, because all these different wedding tastings that I'm doing with all these different menu selections, and then seasonal stuff, and then so it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I've got my next...
You can do that.
My next tasting... is vegan bar food.
Vegan bar food.
Yeah.
What are you going to put on? What's one thing you're going to put on that? Like,
pulled jackfruit sliders.
Okay.
And Nashville hot chicken. I got to figure that one out.
Yeah. I got some things for you.
Yeah.
That sounds so okay. Yeah. So like it, but like at a restaurant, if you had a set menu, you probably couldn't change much to accommodate all these different requests.
Yeah, you so definitely, that's cool. you're stuck as a restaurant. I mean, I think Bankers Hill Restaurant does a pretty good job. That's another one of my go-tos.
They're good.
Is like with the seasonal menu. So they are able to switch out. I mean, they switch out about 80% of the menu every few months.
Wow.
So they only keep the tacos and the burger are the only two mainstays.
That's very San Diego of them, keeping the tacos on no matter what.
Yeah, the tacos and the burger are forever there. And their truffle fries are delicious. But yeah,
that sounds good right now.
That is definitely one of the things that I love about catering is being able to do different things all the time. And
definitely.
And I get regular, you know, like...
Keeps you from being bored too, right?
Yeah, for sure.
What's your favorite concert that you've ever been to?
Oh, my favorite concert. I'm just going to say the first thing that just popped into my mind randomly is when I was 14, I saw No Doubt in and that was
a good
really,
show.
Really, really fun. Yeah. It was the Tragic Kingdom tour, and that was a blast.
Good.
That was a blast, and the Vandals opened for them.
That's a fun show.
That was a really fun show. And then
Where did you see that?
That was in Michigan.
Okay.
In Grand Rapids. And then...
GR.
Yeah. And then in more recent history, I would say... Oh my gosh, that's tough. Wow. Come on, Joanne. It's really been a long time since I've been to a concert.
Or I guess the concert that you would find is your favorite.
Yeah. Gosh.
Well, that's okay.
I'm stuck.
I know you've been to zillions of shows. Or whatever, but like, are your venues going to be equipped to have like music and like concerts and
definitely.
Stuff?
Definitely.
Like some of them?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like all of them definitely can have amplified music. It just would... I don't know. I mean, really, you could probably get away with just about anything at all three.
Because if you go to a wedding, you could probably do some. Yeah.
At all three places, as long as it's done by like 10.
Sure.
As long as you're
nothing too crazy.
Pissing anyone off. I'm not going to like throw a music festival.
Okay,
but
that's where
you could definitely.
That's where I was headed. Dang it.
You could definitely hire a band.
Uh-huh.
I think that at Celesta Ranch and the one at Joshua Tree. I mean, it's my client's property. It's not mine. But I definitely think she could get away with like a tiny music festival.
Okay.
You know, like a
all right. So we got some things in the works.
150, 200 person situation.
Anything to get Joanne singing on stage. You heard it here on the Family Cast. Give me some parting nuggets of wisdom that you learned either from your travels or from your family or maybe even from your kitchen staff. I don't know. What hit me with some something.
Can I just say the five P's? Proper planning prevents poor performance.
That's some people's mantra, you know?
It's great.
That's a mantra.
It is a life mantra. No, I would
have
say...
Have you found that to be true?
Like, I definitely find that to be true.
Are you a big planner like that? Like prior proper planning and stuff like that?
I definitely try to be. And I always feel like I can do better. But I never stop learning. Stay humble.
Do you have a daily routine?
I do. I've been doing a lot of Kundalini yoga recently, which involves a lot of chanting and breath work. It's not the vinyasa yoga that most people are familiar with, where you're like in downward dog and all these things. It's more to do with energetic clearing and cleansing and absorption. Mm-hmm. And then I do that, and then I drink tea or coffee. I like to sit outside in the backyard, get some vitamin D, mm-hmm. talk to the puppy dogs. I usually wake up around 6:30 in the morning and kind of start that process. I change up the order, though. I don't do the exact same thing every day. Some days I wake up and I go straight to my laptop because I feel really focused and I have some things I want to do, and I like to get the clerical work out of the way for the day so I can move on to other things.
Okay.
But yeah, it's typically like clerical work, emails, you know, tea, Kundalini, talking to the dogs, sometimes going for a walk, and then going into the rest of my day.
So it's not always in a particular order, but those are the things.
Those are all the things I need to do.
Okay.
And, you know.
So you have discipline.
I do.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think have you found that you like need that to be successful in the business and in life in general? Kind of. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
When you get off, is that every day or Monday through Friday? Or?
I would say my schedule is the most routine Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. And then on the weekends, it's just kind of like see where the wind takes me. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes working events. But if I'm not, I typically, if I don't have an event, I'm in another city or state or country.
Oh, you're like, ooh, nothing happening. Let's travel.
Travel, yeah. So next weekend, I mean, technically, it's work and pleasure, but next weekend I'm going to be in Baja. But we have an event here, so Chef Sarah Sinyag, not Spry, mm-hmm. but...
Okay. Hi, Sarah.
Sarah is leading an event for us, a pool party out in Del Cerro, yeah. So that'll be fun.
Cannonball.
Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, but I'll be in Baja, so.
So your nugget of wisdom is definitely prior proper planning prevents piss poor performance. Wait, that's seven P's. You said five P's.
Five P's. Maybe. Proper planning prevents poor performance. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Good. So, definitely never stop learning. Keep an open mind and know that you don't know everything.
What's the next thing you're trying to learn? Are you working on a thing?
I am working on a thing. I'm currently in a training program for Akashic Records readings.
What's that?
It is accessing the ancient knowledge and wisdom of our ancestors, and it's real crunchy.
Okay.
But it's a lot of meditation and breath work and stuff, but I'm essentially tapping deeply into my intuition and utilizing meditation to access the records of the past and the future in the ethereal realm. And so we have three intensive weekends of training plus weekly training every Wednesday. So the weekend trainings are 16 hours. It's 2 8-hour days. And then the weekly training is 2 hours. And then we have a retreat that we're all going on together as a group for the summer solstice in the end of June. So we'll be in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and going to all these sacred spots in Wyoming and Montana over a course of 4 days, and doing a lot of tapping into some real intense
energy. Is this a Native American kind of ritual, or is it worldwide?
I definitely would say that it's something that that Native culture taps into. I think it's more specific to India because it's really
Ashkani.
Yeah, it's really it's really closely tied to Reiki and Kundalini yoga, like energy work and healing. Oh, okay. And it's real also tied to astrology, which has a major presence in India.
Okay.
So
India's on your list then also.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. You heard it here. She's going to go to India next after Baja.
Yeah, but everything is like, you know, connected, right? So mm-hmm. The Akashic records exist for every culture. It's just something that I think
that they study.
India is more tapped into currently.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. It's definitely it's a spiritual.
So you really are never stopping learning. You're like doing it. Yeah. I am nonstop. When do you rest? How do you find rest?
I'm actually a great sleeper.
Okay. You're probably tired after all this stuff.
Yeah, I'm a great sleeper. I go to bed. I'm very ritualistic about bedtime.
Oh, okay.
I go to bed every night between 9 and 10. And I pretty much sleep like in the spring and summer, I pretty much sleep 8 to 9 hours, and in the winter I sleep 10 to 12 hours. And
so you're well rested.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a very diurnal animal. As soon as the sun goes down, I start to power down. Okay. And as soon as the sun rises, I start to power up, and I have my most focused energy. My brain works the best in the morning. And yeah, but I get ideas all the time. I'm definitely like an idea machine.
Idea machine.
I wake up every morning and I'm like, and now this is here in my energetic field, and I look at it, and some things come to life and some don't, but yeah.
Awesome.
Lots of ideas all the time.
That's really cool.
What's the best concert you've ever been to?
The tides have turned. That I've ever been to.
Yeah, what's your favorite concert that you've
honestly
ever
been? Lollapalooza 94 or 5, I think. It was
Oh, yeah.
Beastie Boys, Tribe Called Quest, The Breeders, Smashing Pumpkins, Green Day, and, L7, I think, was on there, too, and maybe even 3 or 4 other bands. That's fun. This was at San Diego State, and it was awesome. Like, every single person in San Diego County, it seemed like, was there. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that lineup alone is just really crazy, seeing that, you know, people were pretty cool for the most part. Like, they started, I think at one point they started throwing water bottles at Tribe Called Quest. So they just like left the stage. They only got to play like 2 songs.
Oh no.
Yeah, they're like, knock it off. And then people wouldn't stop. And yeah, so that was a bummer because I really wanted to see them. But Beastie Boys were insane. The Breeders were awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, Smashing Pumpkins were too loud. So I kind of left in the middle.
They are loud.
I remember we had our car parked at like, I don't know, I feel like we walked like 4 miles away from the venue, and you could still hear Smashing Pumpkins playing, like,
yeah,
you know. But the concert itself was really awesome. Just that eclectic mix, and
cool,
you know. So I've been to some good ones, but that one really stands out, I think, because that was the only time I've seen the Beastie Boys too. So
that's cool.
That was like, I'm glad I got to see them.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, you just reminded me, when I was 13, I went to the Tibetan Freedom concert in Golden Gate Park. Yeah. Yeah, they played there, mm-hmm. and Foo Fighters, Metallica, Yoko Ono got booed off stage. but yeah, that was a killer show. My brother took me to that. That was mm-hmm. super fun.
Yeah, the 90s were great for like those festivals that were just like had everybody on them, and kind of set the stage for other festivals to do the same thing. But
yeah,
like, that was really cool because a lot of times you can even get into a free concert sometimes. That was like,
totally,
like Ballon or Outside Lands or whatever. So San Francisco is so awesome for doing stuff like that. But
yeah,
I don't know. I think I covered most of the ground for this part one. You know, we'll do something live from the venue. You know, or you know, when you come to, we'll do one of our pairings together or something like that.
That would be great.
You know, do something at your venues. I would love to cook there or whatever. You know, I do. So that'd be fun. So I don't know.
I'd love that.
Whatever you want, we'll do it.
We can get a videographer involved.
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Get some rad photos. Get some music pairings going on. Mm-hmm. Doggy party, you know, whatever. So we'll do it. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Josh.
Yes, I'm glad we can make it happen, you know. And then I guess I'll see you in the culinary world or singing on stage. Yeah. Get you out there, push you up there and make you sing some.
I mean, if I'm like, if I'm at your pairing dinner and I'm off the clock, I'm not cooking anything. I might sing a little
jump
ditty.
On the bar and
yeah.
I need you more tonight. Yeah. But or whatever you feel like doing. You know?
Some separate ways, worlds plus, apart.
Exactly.
By Journey.
Sure. Yeah.
That song all that. Came into my field like 3 times in 1 day, like this last weekend. I'm like, I haven't heard Separate Ways in a while, and it was like 3 times in 1 day.
People who can pull off Journey at karaoke are pretty entertaining, you know, just that voice in
there
general.
There was one guy at the Old Sod, his name is Jojo, years ago. I mean, I haven't been there in 100 years, but years ago, karaoke at the Old Sod on Thursday night, mm-hmm. Jojo, he sounded just like Steve Perry.
Awesome. Was he Filipino?
He was.
Okay, yeah, because all my Filipino friends who do karaoke sing Journey. And yeah. they're amazing.
Yeah.
You know, they can hit all the notes.
And he was going to like Vegas to compete in karaoke competitions and everything. Like he was the real deal.
I love that.
So good. Yeah.
I wish I was that good. That's fun. Mine is more like, is he really singing that? Wow. He's, you know, because I do a lot of like Pat Benatar, I've done a No Doubt song, you know.
Yeah.
Is he singing a girl song? Or
yeah.
That's awesome. That's so fun. You heard it here. We're going to have a family cast karaoke party sometime ASAP.
Yep. Perfect.
All right, Joanne. I'm going to bid you a fond farewell if I can figure this out. Thanks, doggy.
I do.
Well, there it was, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Chef Joanne Stavile. Prepared with a purpose. Venues by Chef Joanne. Chef Joanne customized catering. Maybe you'll see her on stage at a karaoke bar or a private event. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe she'll sing a little ditty with me at the pairing dinner on May 16th with New Belgium Brewing at Harvest Kitchen. Tickets are on sale now. Get them while you can. It is going to sell out. Don't miss that. Sunday, May 16th, you'll can see Chef Joanne in person. There's no guarantee that she'll sing, but if Eric brings his banjo, we could have a rockin' good time, I bet. So anyways, the conversation with Chef Joanne was a cool one because she does so much more than just, you know, cook in the kitchen. She's also singing and playing music and doing fun stuff with her dogs and rescuing dogs from Baja Dog Rescue and people, random strangers in public. Here, let me take your dog off your hands. She employs a team of women who every time I go in the kitchen, they all look up, hey, Chef Josh, you know, as I walk in. So she's creating an environment for people to thrive. Like she said, she's not always doing all the cooking. Her whole team is doing the cooking. Chef Sarah, she had Danica for a while. She had Chef Chelsea for a while. So all these women have been working in Chef Joanne's kitchens and are also getting their own gigs because of their culinary prowess and their skills and everything like that. So thank you to Chef Joanne for allowing that to happen in your kitchen and to push people on their path. Please subscribe to the show, share it with a friend. Oh, I forgot to say, on Instagram, she is at Chef Joanne. There is no E in that. We are at The Family Cast on Instagram. We are on Patreon at patreon.com/familycast. We are also at, where are we? Not Facebook. Let's see here. Carry the one. If you go to liquiddeath.com and buy some water and put in the code FAMCAST at checkout, you get some goodies from them. We're trying to work out some partnerships with, obviously we're doing New Belgium Brewing and Voodoo Ranger, so I can't really offer any discounts there, but I do like to tell you to support them because they make a good product. And they are run by the woman CEO. I'm sorry. Let's see, what else? What do I have here for you? Essex Coffee Roasters. How can I forget my homie, Aaron? Roasting coffee to order at EssexCoffeeRoasters.com. He also makes custom tea. If you put in the code FAMCAST at checkout, you'll get 10% off your order. And the coffee is delicious, let me tell you. We got some stuff planned in the works from him. He might even sell you some records, who knows? Shout out to you, Aaron, for being a great musician, a great record collector, a great coffee roaster, and all around good dad to Scout. But that was another episode. And be sure to support Chef Joanne Customized Catering. Look her up online. She's got many, many adventures to share with you. What else we got for you? Get your tickets to the dinner on May 16th. What else? There's some other ones coming up. I'm not sure which episode I'm going to be putting out next, but I got some cool guests to share with you. So stay in touch, please.
If you want to email me at the podcast, famcastpod@gmail.com, you can get a hold of me there. If you know my phone number, give me a call or a text. Let's talk. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I want to make sure that everyone is doing okay. And even if you're not, that's okay too. But please, please reach out to somebody and share how you're feeling, because we're all here to help one another. We should be, right? And when it all comes down to it, no matter what your beliefs are in politics, religion, anything like that, I think every human out there wants to help other humans. Come on, you wouldn't want to, you wouldn't see somebody suffering and be like, well, that's your problem. You deep down, you want to help them. Come on, admit it. Help, help, help. Anyways, talk to you soon. Here is a little ditty by my friend, not my friend, my hero, Pat Benatar. Fire and Ice. Rock and roll on the Family Cast. Food and music is life. Yes?
Yes.
Xander says yes indeed. Thank you very much, Xander, my son. Here we go. See you next time. Ciao.
Testing a microphone.
Hi, Prince.
We're in
Papaleko. Papaleko. Nona's tortas.
Principesa.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Family Cast. Food and music is life, yes? Yes, indeed.
Yeah, Xander.